Good evening and welcome to 42 Minutes. Today is the 9th of October and this is our 52nd episode, which means that we are finally playing with a full deck of cards. Will, Morgan, and I have been doing this show since last year. I think it was 10, 13, or I don't remember. But so this is our one-year anniversary show. We're joined with Alan Abadesa-Green and Jason Barrera, and we're just going to talk about doing this thing for a year. And
well, I'm going to ask a funny question for Alan. I want to know people's opinion on the show. I mean, I want to know what your – this sounds cheesy, but you know how in the 1980s when you would have like these review shows, right? Like – once a season, you'd go back and the characters would reminisce about all the episodes. Do you remember that?
A quip show?
Yeah.
You want to do a quip show?
Yeah.
We're doing a quip show, okay?
I would have gotten some quips ready.
Well, which ones really stick out in your head? Let's start with that, Effie.
Well, which one sticks out in your head, Will?
You know, this sounds weird, but I'll tell you which one sticks out in my head. The main one is the one that was lost by Christopher Hunter Myers. That, even though there's no audio, was a real memorable show for me for some reason. Him talking about his insanity and being up front. And some of the things he said I'm still dealing with. Like, I really got something out of it. I know that sounds so weird, but...
the one that really was meaningful for me, and it wasn't planned, it was just typical sync, was when we talked to Ray, like the day after MLK Day, and it just, that's how it was scheduled. It wasn't planned or anything, and it seemed like your editing and then just the tone of that conversation, it really felt like that was a good piece of radio we did that day.
I like Frank Zero, too, to be honest with you. The Frank, do you guys remember that one at all?
Of course, yeah.
Just the biggest thing, the biggest...
No, I thought it was, I thought it was really, like, basically I heard him on 42 Minutes and I was like, oh, wow, it's going to sound insulting, but seeing him on Facebook, he always says, like, the cartoon pictures, I assumed he was, like, I don't know, a 13-year-old boy or something. That probably sounds so messed up, but I just... and then I heard him on 42 Minutes. It's like, oh, wow, this guy is legit. And I so enjoyed listening to him that I think it was a week or two later I asked them to come on Always Record. I just was like, all right, I want to hear more of what he has to say.
Yeah, because he's very intelligent. And he really lays down what he knows. I've called him after that show and asked him his advice on certain things, and that was just I'd like the variety that we've had on here. There's been so many different opinions, and it's really kind of what we set out to do. So I feel like this year's been pretty productive.
Speaking of opinions, we've got a guy named Dr. Gibbs Williams next week. And so he's not part of our regular community necessarily. I mean, he's somebody that you found, Will, but apparently he makes people mad with the way he describes his synchronicity. And so I'm really excited to hear what he has to say.
Well, see, sync seems to be a very personal thing for everybody, and they seem to have an opinion of what it is and want to express their personal, you know, experiences and everything. But it's difficult because it's such a person. It's always that, you know, you had to be there type of situation. But I've also noticed that there's been like friction in opinions. Do you guys see that too, as far as syncs? Like, I guess it's true with anything. Like any fringe community has its like disagreements, right?
I would assume so, yeah. And I think, for the most part, I think it's, you know, when I see it on places like Facebook or Blogger comments, it always seems kind of juvenile and ugly. And maybe it's just, you know, medium is the message, right? It's why I thought Frank Zero was a kid. It's like this idea of, if it's on Facebook, it sort of becomes less serious or important. But there's something about what you guys do here which gives everyone a chance to really explain their position, talk about it, and I think you make them feel so comfortable that you really get to, I was just, you know, Alexis, Doug, you know Alexis, you've met her. I was talking to her the other day, and she said, after 42 minutes, you feel like you really know the guests. And she's like, I know that's the point of every, of all, most interviews, but most interviews, you don't feel that. But after 42 minutes, you really feel like you know the person and you understand where they're coming from. And I think what's happening here is so healthy because it's giving people a venue. And I'm hoping, you know, just to say, I hope that's what the Sync book does as well, both the written end and the audio end. But giving people a space to have to explain their points of view that you don't have to agree with, but to like, okay, I see where you're coming from, give you a real chance to, you know, giving that point of view a chance. And I feel like it just kind of diffuses some of the hostility. Like there can still be disagreements, of course. There can still be, you know, like strong feelings one way or the other. You know, Kyle Hunt's still going to feel like it's some gay Jewish conspiracy or whatever, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, Jake Hudson's going to think, still think that it's like Jupiter sending him a laser beam to Nirvana. And those are two completely different points of view. And yet you can put them in the same space and go, well, okay, that makes sense. And just, it just kind of, I don't know, it just takes some of that hostility out. I really enjoy it.
Well, thanks. And since we're being gracious, which is a good thing to do after a year's worth of this kind of stuff, I want to take a moment and really thank you, Alan, for the time you put in for the website recently. If you don't know about it, listeners, you should go and check it out right now at www.thesyncbook.com/42minutes.
Forward slash.
It's a forward slash. Thank you, Jason. My editor is in the house.
I'm the producer.
What he's done is he put an image to every single episode that we did, and the image actually like a really cool comic book cover or like a sci-fi novel from the 70s somehow encapsulates all the content of the episode into the one image, and they're wonderful. And if you participated in one of the shows with us, you get kind of a kick out of it. I think my favorite one of those, for some reason, Jake Kotz's The Blob image with Violator's monster thing, they just look really cool together.
I don't think a favorite of mine. Like, I love the way the green room for Andros Jones and Kyle Hunt, how you have the Radio 8-Ball, and then the...
In the rainbow alphabet.
In the rainbow alphabet. It's tight.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Thank you, Alan.
Oh, thank you, guys. Yeah, it's really... And this was... It's funny that we're doing this. I don't know, this probably seems so put on, but I really... It's like, literally, doing this in the last 2 weeks or whatever that I updated the website was sort of like a... It was a clip show for me. It was like, oh, revisiting all these shows and going like, you know, and something I had to think about, like, what was this show about? So, you know, I'm trying to find an image for it. And it really was like kind of going back, seeing, and just once I put it all together and you kind of see how many shows there are and how many cool guests. And like a lot of these shows, like the earlier shows that I hadn't thought about in a while, I'm going like, I really enjoyed this, you know, and I don't know. So it's just, it's really awesome. It's I was happy to do it in that respect because back when you guys first started and, you know, it was like me and Nexus of Sync, your only listeners, you know, like you had two
fans. And thank goodness for Nexus of Sync. That guy came, he was in the chat room before I was there. He's ready to go. We have dedicated audience members for this show.
I'll tell you, one of the funniest moments that I remember is when Always Record took over. when I was all excited about downloading an episode that I missed being there for, an episode that I wasn't actually on, and it comes on and it's like, Always Record, episode 42. I fell out of my seat. I mean, it was a serious LOL. If you
that was Doug's idea, I believe. He asked me to do that.
Oh, you guys played it well, because Doug's all like, "What? What? Wait?"
Well, here's something funny from last week, and maybe this is an interesting topic too. We had that really good discussion with Sybil, and then afterwards, Will kept saying, "I'm not recording, you know that, right?" And then we started going, and then all of a sudden I started quoting from her ThinkBook text to her, and he said, "Doug, we're not recording." I'm like, "What do you mean? What do you mean?" It's like, "Well, you're using your radio voice."
Yeah.
What do you mean by radio voice? I don't have a radio voice.
We do that sometimes, though. I mean, asking the individual, that's what we really set out to do, is the just asking the individual questions. Because I don't know, it's just sync is so rich if you have, or like sharing interpretations to me. The moments where you're like going back and forth and there's like, "Oh, I know exactly what you mean," are like the things that make the hair on the back of my neck stand up. So I'm just like Ringo Starr. I'm just very happy to be here.
You know, it's funny. I think early on I used to prepare a lot more for the episodes. I mean, we still do a fair amount of preparing, but it seemed like I used to have these really elaborate maps that I would put in front of me, like all kinds of notes and little diagrams and things. And I think I used to read a lot in the beginning of the show. I would purposely read like text, even things that I just pulled off the bathroom floor that morning before the show. I don't know. It's interesting to think about how these things have kind of evolved.
Do you guys hear it? I mean, your style of this show has so come such a long way. And like, I loved the early shows, but you've gotten really good at this. Like, do you notice it? Do you feel more confident about it? Or
I feel good. I don't feel any more. There's always a little bit of self-doubt when you put yourself out there on like a public forum or whatever. But I think that we have gotten comfortable, do you know what I'm saying, talking and discussing sync. I think it was a little bit uncomfortable for us at first. And because of that, it's just a comfortable setting. But, you know, I brought up Always Record because I love it too. Always Record and what it – I mean – I was thinking, like, I jot notes down. It was interesting. You guys did this Always Record recently – where you started off talking about Dangerous Method, right? I mean, the shows are completely different. They're completely different, but there's like a little bit of relation and back and forth with them, which I've really enjoyed. But in Always Record, you guys were talking about Dangerous Method, and you guys were talking about Freud and Jung and this middle woman who is played by Keira Knightley. I can't remember why, but you guys moved right from that into Pirates of the Caribbean, once again with Keira Knightley, and you guys didn't even mention that. And then right after that, you guys started talking about Star Wars. And I'm like, Keira Knightley, she's like the false Amidala. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I don't know. It's just so stimulating.
Keira means dark. So she's a dark knight.
And the cool thing is in Dangerous Method, you know.
Wait, what means dark?
Keira means dark, according to.
Oh, yes, dark knightly.
So she's a dark knight.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
But what interests me is she's like the dark queen. Do you know what I'm saying? She's like the
she's the black swan's black swan.
Well, she's Veronica in Never Let Me Go.
Ah, this Betty and Veronica thing's been fucking haunting me lately. That's awesome. But okay, because in the Dangerous Method, when they're walking in that patch, you know what I'm saying, Alan? Where the little – I think that's probably a landmark in Vienna that he always used to walk at. But he's always in front of that Sphinx. They put – like on the movie poster, Keira Knightley is between Freud and Jung, right? And then there's these scenes in there where they have that Sphinx in between them when they're talking in the garden. And then there's another scene Correct. When they're going to America and they're talking, and all of a sudden you see the Statue of Liberty between them. So there's always this dark mother character in between the two of them. Like,
sure, and I guess, you know, in one respect, the director might have been playing with the idea of, like, a woman coming between them, you know, they were such good friends and blah, 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 and then a woman comes between them. You could play with that on one level, but obviously there's so much more. The fact that it's ISIS, the Statue of Liberty, the fact...
go back and look at that Sphinx. Look back at the Sphinx, because what it looks like is Amidala. It looks like
right. It
has the same headdress as Amidala does.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I don't know if anyone listened to the episode, but what I was trying to make the point, and this is very much inspired by conversations you and I have had of Viggo Mortensen being the ego, you know, him being Freud, him being the king in Lord of the Rings, his name being Ego Mort, Ego Death.
Ego Death.
And right. And he, the fact that they kept positioning him in front of the Sphinx brings us back to the Wheel of Fortune card and the Rota Fortunae, which is the cycle of the king kill, where you see a Sphinx at the top of the wheel. So to me, it was like, I have to wonder, like, you know.
Okay, so in Inception, you've got Marion Cotillard as the Sphinx telling the riddle, and then she jumps off the building, and then in the movie Tarot site, I put On the Fool, I juxtapose that with Keira Knightley in Atonement jumping into the fountain, and she's got like the same hair, and she looks exactly like Maul in Inception.
Right.
In that scene, if you go on to the movie Tarot site.
Have you seen Contagion yet?
Yes.
I found it interesting because it had Maul and it had Winslet in it.
Yes.
I don't know why that's important, but for me it's kind of interesting because it's a double Dark Mom. One of the coolest Dark Mom, or Other Mother, as I sometimes call her, was I saw, have you guys seen Being John Malkovich lately?
Not like about 7 months ago is most recent.
That movie is fucking bananas, dude. Like, bananas. And I mean that literally. Like, the fucking... They're talking about the soul that's born over and over and over again, and Cameron Diaz is like the mother to this chimpanzee, right? And the chimpanzee's name is like Elijah or whatever, which is like... It's like the man who is always born over and over again. Do you know what I mean? In the Bible, it's like the chimpanzee is—it's just fucked up. Like, it's too symbolic. It's just way too symbolic.
Jason, on the most recent Mask of God post, you go into the monkey symbolism.
Yeah, I was talking about like a shadow that recurs across time as kind of the. And my mouth is full of Triscuits.
And we get paid by Triscuit Nabisco.
Yes.
What?
And Well, I was just saying that how that's like kind of like the beast archetype that.
Well, King Kong was called the Beast. Like they had a running title for King Kong was called the Beast, and of course that shows through. And the beauty is the beast, or the beauty killed this beast, or so forth and so on. I mean, he's a very devil archetypical symbol.
Right. So it's like this pre-existent shadow figure that kind of manifests itself across the generations that you have to deal with. That's kind of this Dracula kind of figure. And, you know, Dracula is kind of this inhuman kind of thing that lives on. He can't be killed. He's kind of this shadow figure that is an undead creature, that sort of thing. And then in Bram Stoker's Dracula, the Francis Ford Coppola movie, you have Dracula as this kind of beast monkey character.
Right. He looks very monkey when he looks at the camera.
Yeah.
At one point. But he turns into all kinds of weird things, and that fucking movie's weird too.
And of course, he's played by Gary Oldman. So again, it's the old man as the pre-man, the Superman, the new man.
And then
it goes back to the Nietzschean thing where man is a bridge between beast and Superman.
Right.
I'm thinking about that a lot. We're already there.
The whole well, that brings up another episode that we had, and that's Kripal. I mean, this whole idea of the Superman and the because a big part of this is the realizing you're in a story, realizing that you're in the mid part of a story, I guess, is what we're doing. Is that part of our evolution?
Well, there's a great book that I just finished this week called The Storytelling Animal that's all about the monkey writing the books, because we're the monkey writing the books. But
and that's what I try to do. I try to tie it into your post.
Well, thank you. I skunked it all up by putting a picture of Madame Bovary at the
top. No, it was good.
And I don't know why. That was just one of my little gut things where I wanted to look at Madame Bovary. Anyway, we've evolved to spend a portion of our time simulating reality in Neverland. Like, we're the only animal that has this fantasy world. And so the guy wrote all about that from an evolutionary
Do you see the relationship to all of this in Oz at the same time because of the flying monkey?
Right, the Wicked Witch controls the flying monkeys. So it's that evolutionary thing again where she kind of...
Right, and I always see the monkey...
Like, okay, wait. I have to jump in here because this is a point I try and make all the time. You know, so many people talk about The Wizard of Oz, whether you have the mind control crowd talking about it or, you know, the people who want to say it mean it's an economic analogy and all these things. I find that very few people have actually read The Wizard of Oz book.
I have.
In The Wizard of Oz book, Dorothy, so there is a hat that controls the monkeys.
Right, the gold hat.
Which could, of course, indicate mind control, essentially. They're mind-controlled monkeys.
It's actually in the movie. Did you know that?
Well, but in the movie, Dorothy doesn't get it. In the book, she does. Like, in the book, Dorothy takes control of the monkeys and uses the monkeys to fly her back to the next leg of her journey.
Right. She goes back to the Emerald City with the monkeys.
Well, right. So, well, she actually doesn't... I don't think she gets all the way. Something happens. But what the point is that when you talk about this idea of, like, if this is your shadow figure, this is the integration and use of it, perhaps, or the idea of it being a bridge, whatever analogy you want to throw on here, I just want to bring in, when you said the flying monkeys, is that, at least for Dorothy, if we're using her as a metaphor, she didn't just fight the monkeys, she had to learn to control the monkeys.
I just...
Well, that's why the monkey is the savior in Phenomena.
Yeah.
The monkey's the one who kills the Wicked Witch at the end of that movie.
You know what I just saw is the Muppets Wizard of Oz? And that thing followed the book a lot more closely. Mm-hmm. It made some deviations, but it was. I've always wanted an Oz movie that followed the book because...
And of course, I'm betting that Frank Oz is probably a part of that one.
Yeah, they actually mention that. Like, they get in front of the Wizard of Oz, and they're like, hey, are you related to Frank Oz? And it's like a pum-tsh. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, Jim Henson is coming up a lot. I mean, you got the Big Bird with Obama and Romney.
It was insane. It was insane. Everything Henson touched, or even if after his death, like, everything that's Muppets is sinky as hell.
Right. Because, you know, I'm grooving on Labyrinth and, like, The Dark Crystal.
Right. It's thick as shit.
The Dark Crystal is the thing that keeps me, whenever I feel like I'm slightly going off the rails, The Dark Crystal totally grounds me.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, the most beautiful movie. it's so, so grounding, so good.
There's something else.
And have you guys seen Henson's The Cube?
I did watch that at your recommendation.
I have not seen
What'd you think of that?
It was very good. Jim Henson is really kind of an underrated genius.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I wonder also because in The New King Kong by Peter Jackson, it's the same actor as the guy who does the New King or the Gollum. And the whole
Andy Serkis.
Say his name.
I think it's Andy Serkis.
Something spelled it's very close.
Serkis.
It's such a weird name. I don't even attempt to say it. But there's I don't know. It's the whole eagles and flying monkeys and because the 2001 the monkeys and then he throws the bone and the next thing you see is them in space. So it's monkeys trying to make it to the moon, and King Kong's always reaching for the moon. And there's some relationship to the flying monkeys being the monkeys who make it to the moon.
Okay, so last night I had a dream that I was shuffling tarot cards. I was going through my deck.
What? I had a dream. Sorry, I had a dream about a tarot deck last night. Please go on.
Okay, but so all my cards were out of sync. Like, for some reason... I don't know if you pick up on this, but I'm a little fastidious. I like things to be nice and straight and neat.
No shit. Or,
orderly, yes. And so, but so the all the cards were like not right. So some were upside down, and then some were upside, some were backwards, and that kind of thing. And so I was straightening them in my dream. But then I woke up this morning and pulled a card. But the interesting thing that I found was I actually pulled in the deck that I'm really liking right now. It's called the Wildwood deck, and it's based on more of a pagan symbol set. And so they have dates to some of the cards. So I pulled December 21st, which is interesting, but the card is Moon on the Water. And this had everything to do with everything we're just talking about, but I can't figure out what my point was.
Space monkeys?
Well, yeah. Oh, the moon.
Yeah.
That's what it was. But the interesting thing about this card, and I can't find it now, I'm digging through the deck, is so it's called Moon on the Water. And so basically you're looking at a marsh in this card, and there's a bull that's kind of howling at the moon or something. But there's an egg. The primordial egg is in this swamp. It looks like a reflection of the moon, and unless you're like looking, you won't recognize that that's not a reflection of the moon. That's this egg that's about to hatch. And so
that's no moon.
See, it's
Do
weird
not
because
to the most recent always record.
Yes, it was
right.
all
That's
about
no
the
moon. It's an egg.
It's
an egg.
Egg. I've
the
been
Death Star is an egg.
I've been going. I've been egging out to the extreme lately, and I hear a lot of talk over at the Sinkhole with Jim and Jake talking about moon this and moon that and moon the other. So I just feel like there's a really, really strong pull towards the moon right now. And see, this whole thing with Tom Hanks is cool because he's the man in the moon. In a lot of ways, he's always seen with this moon, like in Joe the Volcano, of course, Apollo 13, and him not making it to the moon. Of course, Ed Harris, the man in the moon, is the guy who's his control man.
Okay,
yeah,
so
sorry.
No, this is you talk, Jason.
Well, Ed Harris is always like Big Brother. Like in A Beautiful Mind, he calls himself Big Brother, and then you know, in The Truman Show, he's Big Brother.
Right, he's the creator.
And he's ground control in Apollo 13, so he's always like this guy standing in front of the moon.
Right.
And then on Doug's card here, we've got this bull in front of the moon. And the bull is, of course, the Minotaur at the center of the labyrinth.
Yeah.
So you've got the Minotaur in front of the moon, and of course the moon is the moon goddess. So so with the whole symbolism with like the monkey shooting for the moon is like the Adamic man figure shooting himself towards this goddess figure, like the moon goddess. Which is kind of what I was trying
it's
to say.
It's the moon child all over again, over and over and over and over.
Right, right. You're aiming yourself for Diana.
Right.
You know, aiming your bowman's arrow.
Artemis.
At Artemis, Diana. It's Apollo performing the marriage on Artemis. And so in that Mask of God post, I was kind of, that's kind of the covert narrative where I was trying to respond to what you guys over at the Sinkhole were trying to do with the moon keys. Video, which is like the ape, like, is destined to go to the moon, which is the moon goddess, which is, I guess, Sophia in this case.
One of my, I really geeked out for like, it felt like a whole year on the moon, but I was watching a lot of the Tom Hanks things, because not only did he do Apollo 13, but he also did, and I think part of it was investigating the whole conspiracy theory, whether or not I wanted to come to some conclusion about that.
Of course. The moon is tightly wrapped around the WTC at the same time. It's very iconical to see the WTC with the moon, but go on.
There was an HBO series called From the Earth to the Moon that Tom Hanks produced, I think. But the interesting thing that I just realized was in that he played Méliès, the guy who made the famous moonshot. movie, you know, the one that Hugo is based upon.
Voyage to the Moon.
Right. And Tom Hanks was actually, he actually played, well, now I forget. I think he did play the, now I'm going to have to look.
I like the fact that all of this is around the moon landing, the WTC, and Rosemary's Baby are all connected too. And there's one of the guys, because Planet of the Apes was made that same year, and her best friend, Rosemary's Baby, is like the main orangutan who is.
Yeah, so like Rosemary's Baby is the ape. Like that's like Sophia's like abortive creation is this ape creature who is like humanity.
Right.
As this evolving ape figure.
Right.
Okay, I need to stop you there.
See that connection?
Right, check this out. It's not online yet, I'm sure it's not online yet, but there was theoretically an Always recorded today, which would be David Plait, Bill Klaus, and Andros Jones talking about Rosemary's Baby.
Did it actually happen?
I would assume so, but I don't know. When I left the house, I had spoke to them, they were all going to do it. Mm-hmm. What I'm getting at, though, is so then I had to go out at blah, blah, blah. I'm just out for the day. I end up in this pizzeria. And I was on the phone with Andres. We were talking all these things. I end up in this pizzeria. There's only three images on the wall. One is a painting of JFK, RFK, and who I guess was supposed to be Teddy.
That's enough right there to send you into La La Land.
Now, wait. The other was an illustration of the New York skyline with a focus on the World Trade Center. And the third image was just a photo of a woman nursing a child. So JFK, fucking World Trade Center, and Rosemary's Baby, or the Moon Child, however you want to read into that. I walk into this place while running around trying to do all these things, and that's there. So it's just kind of crazy. It's been a crazy sinky day for me, but there is something so entwined. And theoretically, if they did the Always Record today, there's a lot, because Andros and I have been having this conversation over the last few days of how, you know, of course, all the Sharon Tate stuff is mixed in with, and Roman Polanski all mixed in with JFK and RFK.
Right.
There's like a crazy list of synchronicities.
It's fucking stupid.
That all take place. Yeah, it's ridiculous. And as we pointed out, first they broke the ground for the World Trade Center in 1968. They break ground on the second tower in 1969, which is the year of the moon launch. I mean, 1968, when they break ground on the first tower, is the year of Rosemary's Baby. It's just all like in this.
Where do they
crazy
find the monolith? They find the monolith on the moon. And that's the whole point.
Yes.
Like if you read the book 2001, he makes a point out of saying that. He's like, they put it on the moon because they had to, you know, you had to get to the moon to be responsible.
Okay, but back to my card. Part of me thinks that the moon is like this symbol, the symbolic egg, and the Apollo is this penis that we fertilize the egg with, and then what do you get out of it?
2001 is all phallic. I mean, you have this long ship with the head, and out of it comes these pods on the tip.
So tell me about.
So Space Monkey becomes the 2001 Space Baby.
Yeah.
But tell me, what's in this egg? Is it Sync Book 2? Is it another year of?
I don't think it's that simple.
Another year of 42 minutes? Is it the unknown unknowns? What is the unknown unknowns? What is it?
So
what's in this egg?
This brings up fucking, because Mark LeClaire had this. Mark LeClaire said something about it's all about this beast being born who's going to take. And, you know, you can't write Mark LeClaire off. Every time I've tried to, something he said synced with me the very next day. So, I mean.
Oh, yeah, I know. He's a genius. He's a crazy, crazy genius.
It's bananas.
But they might say the same thing about you, Jason.
I think it's safe to say we all think about that about each other. I think you're all fucking crazy, but I also think you're all brilliant. Like, literally, any time I think about any of you, and that goes to the whole community, every time I go, wow, that guy is crazy, within 2 days, there's something that where I go, oh, I get what he was getting at. Yeah, that's actually really smart.
But
I don't know.
That's the way
that's
I feel.
I love,
like I just don't write anybody off anymore, and I don't have an opinion on anybody. I mean, I'm glad that we have stuck to a tradition as far as a sync book being for anyone, everyone. I mean, if somebody wants to be on it, contact me, but I'm not going to – I mean, that's why it's 42 minutes. If you want to just fucking berate us and yell at us and say that we're all fucking crazy and nutso, you got 40 minutes to do it, and then I'm turning your ass off.
Which is a good point to bring up. So if you like the show and you want to be on the show, don't wait for us to call you. Send Willer and I an email, and we'll talk to you about your ideas and stuff. I mean, we have a number of shows lined up, and a whole another year's worth of interesting things to explore. But if you want to be part of it, you should contact us.
Agreed.
And I'm sure there'll be a lot of people from Sync Book 2, a lot of the authors from Sync Book 2 that you'll have on in the next, you know, few months. So there's
that's
gonna
how the
be...
show was born, if you remember. I mean, so yeah. It's like, I don't know how, I mean, it seemed like Will and I kind of had the same idea about the same time that we wanted to be tied down to something on a weekly basis or some kind of routine. We wanted to get into some kind of routine.
Ritual. I believe we called it ritual many times.
Right. And it's funny because, I mean, early on, I really, really looked forward to it every single week.
I still do, to tell you the truth. There's not been a week that I've almost regretted the ones that I had off.
Well, I kind of went through a hating phase this year. But
you jumped the shark.
I told
at some point Doug said to me, "Did we jump the shark?"
What does that mean?
The whole movement jumped the shark.
Does that mean like right. Shit the bed? What the fuck does that?
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to be crazy.
It doesn't matter to me at this point. As long as we can communicate.
I call Ellen and I'm like, I'm right in the middle of an anxiety attack, and I say, I don't want to start a new religion, okay? This is just an art movement, okay?
Well, can I just say, you know, that's so interesting. You, Will, you said at the beginning of the call that you found yourself more comfortable talking about Sync now. And I think it's interesting because it is a really hard thing to talk about. And I think Neil Kramer on his most recent 42 Minutes touched on this also, was the idea that, and let me tell you, after doing a year of Sync Book interviews on other radio shows where I'd have to go on these shows and explain what is Sync and what is synchromysticism. And after a while, I was like, oh, my God, I feel like I'm pushing a religion. And it's just because there's this really fine line. It gets really tricky sometimes to talk about esoteric concepts, to talk about anything beyond the ordinary without sounding like you're putting forth some sort of philosophy or whatever. And I understand why Doug always is cautious there. And I think that's great. Like, I don't think you should be freaking out about it, obviously. But I'm glad that you're there as the, like, there should always be brakes put on whenever it seems like it's leaning.
He's a Bulgarian character who's just in it for chicks.
Yeah.
Who? What just happened? I feel like I just got hit by a car.
It's so funny because last week I've been really seriously thinking about should we take this to that level of like creating Sync merchandise? And so it's like
it's never going to get organized. Like I've heard people talk about this before.
We had this kind of, it was more like an argument last week about the same time. And it's like, Jason summed it up entirely correctly, which goes to Alan's point, was he said, you're right, we should create the symbol and worship it like a crucifix or something. You know, I wanted to make these Sync hoodies. I was really excited about making these Sync hoodies, but then what is it that we're selling? And it's like, it gets really weird really fast. It's like, yeah.
What idol do you use when you're worshiping the golden calf?
I use the two arrows.
That's true for campaign now. So I guess it's not really specific to us.
Well, Sync is difficult because of that, because it's so indefinable. I mean, we use the word Sync, but it really doesn't define.
That's its strength. That's its strength.
It's everywhere.
It?
If you look, you're syncing all your devices all the time.
It's the study of Tao. It's like, it's fucking indescribable.
It's all an inception.
Everything goes back to Leo, and Leo is the cat, therefore he is the beast.
All right, he's the director.
It's true, though. Like, you sent me that thing that in Shutter Island, the Nebuchadnezzar acting like the beast is very prominent when he enters the psychiatrist's office.
Right, he's the king of the world.
Right.
But he's been laid low.
Right, he's been turned into the king of the world, has been made into a beast, the King Kong, the King Zero.
Mm-hmm.
The all, you know, the all and the nothing, the alpha and the omega.
He's in division from his spouse, his Shekinah. So of course he's going to be a little crazy. Right. He's the hanged man.
The zero kind of looks like a noose, doesn't it?
The what?
The zero looks like a noose.
Yes.
Silence. Silence over the apes. Sorry.
So we're at about 41 minutes now. We have a minute left.
Sync Book 2, November 29th. We think we have a date. Jason and I are busting our asses to make sure this is out for everybody. It's going to be really awesome.
Yeah, we've got a direct line to IWAS on this one. So he said that, like, the Book of the Law is out. The Sync Book 2 is in. This is the new word of the Aeon.
Let's be real, though. IWAS is just going to ask Valis.
Yeah, Valis is the word of the Aeon, who is Mott, of course.
Yeah. And Valis is going to talk to Mott, and Mott's going to talk to Kali. And Ganesh is going to make Sync Book 2 happen.
That's right.
Oh, good. Then I don't have to do anything.
That's awesome. By higher power.
I'm glad that Iowas or Lamb or Valis or whomever is going to take care of it. That means then I don't have to worry about it. Great.
So now
Jason and I are going to Tahiti. And when we get back, we expect that Iowas, Valis have taken care of it.
So I think that's pretty much all we got time for today, gentlemen. Alan, you have to be the higher power from now on.
No, you know, I'm going to leave you with this. You last week you had Sybil on. This is probably a longer thing than just a few seconds. I'm going to try really fast. You had Sybil on. She talks about the idea of the Eddie Murphy having to stop worrying about other people's words and worry about his own words. Now, I've been working on a book and then having to do Sync Book 2. At first, I have to admit, straight up, I was feeling some real resentment for Sync Book 2 when I started doing this because I had to put all my work on the side. And I was struggling with that. And then I heard Sybil's interview and it really made me pause. But I realized after thinking about it all week long, I realized it doesn't have to be this division. It doesn't have to be like that. It's, you know, this. As we've, I think, as we're understanding, is it doesn't have to be us or them. Is do I worry about me or we and all these things? Is there is a way to do both, and it's a lot of work, and it's, trust me, this is a ton of work, but there's a way to do both, and there's a way to stay true to. I'm really proud of the fact that we are giving people a platform, and that we're putting out these great books and these great radio shows and all this stuff. And at the end of the day, it inspires me to go back and work my own artwork. So, you know, it doesn't have to be one or the other. It's I subscribe to the AND, both philosophy.